Kevin said, why don't we do it almost a cappella, using totally, for the backing track, totally voices, all voices, not Beach Boys type of voices, just a wall of sound. I said, yeah, and how are we going to do that? And it was Lowell who came up with the idea of making tape loops that we could run ad infinitum, forever. We'd just run them. So we spent another 3 weeks then recording three guys, Kev, Lowell and Graham, just singing R in the studio onto the 16-track machine. Each note had 16 tracks of three people, if you've got your calculator there. And we had to record a chromatic scale of 12 voices that would fit any chord in the song. We put the tape loops around this Studer stereo machine and then out to mic stands with little rollers on the top, so the tape would run through there and we could tension the machine properly. Then I fed across to the 16-track machine and filled each of the 12 tracks with a separate note of these masked vocals. So I think eventually there were 256 voices on these tracks. And at the same time, we'd recorded a very, very simple backing track, stereo backing track, with me on electric piano, little rhythm guitar, and Kevin playing a bass drum on a Moog synthesizer, just to follow it.
I'm not in love, so don't forget it. It's just a silly phase I'm going through.
The four of us actually got around the control desk and started to feed the chords as they were changing within the song, up and down with the faders. And whilst we were doing that, I'd locked all the faders with a piece of gaffer tape, so they're all around about minus 24 on the faders. But because it was a chromatic scale, there was this lovely sort of hissing, breathy sound, like when you walk in a concert hall and people are just talking very quietly, but there's this wonderful hiss. Ah!
All of which probably explains why nothing had ever sounded quite like that record before, had it?
It was a milestone in recording. The production was absolutely beautiful, and the process that they went through to create this epic record was incredible, bearing in mind the time. This is 34 years ago that this record was made. So a lot of the techniques that were used on this record were done for the very, very first time, especially the vocals. Now, as Eric mentioned, the vocals were recorded individually across the 16 tracks and then bounced down. Now, luckily, at the very, very front of this multitrack, there's the remnants of one of the tracks. So this is actually what one of the multitracked voice loops actually sounded like. So if I isolate that first, and that very slight blip you can hear, that's where the splice would have been in the loop. So although you can actually hear the loop as it goes through with the splice point, in this case, when you had the other 11 added, all at different splice points, the loop point would have been inaudible. So now if we start the actual multitrack up, you can hear what Eric was talking about, this sound that does sound like you're entering a cathedral, some hallowed space. What we're hearing is a result of them playing the mixing console as if it was a keyboard cum instrument. So each fader had one particular note on it. So putting, say, three or four faders up would create a chord. And as they knew what the chord progression of the song was, they could go through it bit by bit. They could, of course, drop in and out of the stereo track that I'm now playing to correct any errors in their mixing. So this final track is a result of all those man hours of work. It's absolutely beautiful. The other addition is that there's a second track of the same thing, but played at half speed. So that creates this low octave. This is particularly noticeable on the bit where it goes, ah, 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 ah. And you can hear both the high original pitched vocals and the low octave vocals.
So Eric's using his half-speed trick again, which he obviously likes. I don't remember another record that starts off with the vocals being produced and then you playing along with it. But this seems to have started with just the vocals.
That's right. They created a guide backing track just to make sure they mixed the vocals in the right sections with the right balances. But once they had their correct vocal track, they then proceeded in the control room, which creates a very, very different atmosphere, played in the control room the rest of the instruments. The Fender Rhodes. The electric guitar. And curiously, no drums. This bass drum was actually created by a Moog synthesizer. Now, Lol had one of the very first Moog synthesizers in the country, and he'd learned how to program it, so he was able to create this unusual soft bass drum sound, which Kevin played, being the drummer, throughout the song. In fact, a real drum kit would have been overpowering on this record, so it suits the subtlety of the backing track. So you're right that they played along to a pre-recorded Ooh backing track, which is unusual. So once they got the backing track to their satisfaction, they then subsequently overdubbed in the traditional sense. So, for example, the other backing vocals were sung to a finished track. So let me isolate those first of all. It's because, ooh, you wait a long time for me. Now, there are many things on this record that people will be so familiar with, and I think one of the most familiar things is the spoken voice. The only time that there's not a 10cc person on this record. Now, this is Kathy, the studio secretary. And once again, to make my job easy, Eric has recorded the effects on Kathy's voice. So what you're hearing is exactly as Eric recorded it, including the fact that it fades out as it loops round.
Be quiet. Big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry.
So that's Kathy with the nice
Big
voice.
And it is so integral to the record. You can't imagine that not being on there. And just a great production trick. Now, talking of things that are not on there, there's one part of Eric's lead vocal that never made it to the final record. And luckily, they never erased it. So here is an alternative lead vocal at the bridge section. Now, when they came to mix the record, or just before they came to mix the record, Lowell had suggested that they didn't really like that section, so he played the melody on a piano, and that's actually what's on the finished record. But at the same point on another track is Eric's original vocal with some other lyrics.
Don't feel let down, don't get hung up, we do what we can.
This is probably the first time this has ever been heard outside of the studio, and probably for 34 years. So is that a case of we are so familiar with the finished record that by now hearing that section it sounds out of place? Had we grown up with that part, maybe we'd have got used to it.
Any other little tricks and surprises you've discovered?
Yes, this little sounds interesting. This is a music box, and there's two tracks of it. It was double-tracked. Again, it's another one of those little production tricks that maybe not so familiar to everybody first time on listening, but now I'm pointing it out to you. I think if you listen to the record again, it'll be very familiar.
How did they do that, then?
They told me that it was one of those toy music boxes on a string that you pulled to make it play its little tune, and then by double-tracking it, it creates this very slightly strange Doppler effect. Plus, there's a lot of echo and effects added to it, which creates this sort of somewhat surreal sound. It fits so well in the track.
I'm Not In Love was presented with three Ivor Novello Awards: Best Pop Song, International Hit of the Year, and Most Performed British Work. To date, the song's been heard on American radio over 3 million times. And if our calculations are correct, if we allow a full running time of 6 minutes per play and we run those plays back to back, it would be roughly the equivalent of 34 years of airtime for a single released in May 1975.